have ignition sequence start. The engines are on. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast, a place for conversation with church leaders about social media, web trends, and everything and anything else our hosts want to talk about. Nils Smith is the innovation pastor at Community Bible Church in San Antonio, Texas, loves the Spurs, and walking the streets of New York with his family. Jay Cranda is the online campus pastor at Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California, loves the Lakers, anything golf, and once could do a heel flip. To engage with the show, use the hashtag SMCPodcast. Let's join the show.
Welcome to this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. My name is Jay Cranda. I'm without my co-host, Nils Smith, but we have a special guest, Freddie Cardoza. And so, Freddie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, so Freddie, a little bit about you, and I feel like I got to read like pages here because you've done so much. You serve as the director of the Christian Education Program, and you're one of the professors at the Christian Education Program at Bayou University at Talbot, which is a leading private Christian university in the greater Los Angeles area, a little bit near and dear to my heart because I graduated from the undergrad from the CE program and also from Talbot's program. So I love that. I know we've talked briefly about that. And so I'm a little jealous and I'm a little like, you know, I love the program. So I'm glad you're in that position. And I actually have, I'm going to have some questions about that here in a moment because I know the program has gone through a lot of changes in the last, since I've graduated. There's been quite a bit. You also serve as an executive director of the Society of Professors in Christian Education, which involves a couple hundred point people in organizations, and which is a huge ministry and a huge networking. I bet just so many learnings there. You also are married. You have two teenage sons, and you live in Irvine. And just to kind of the last couple of things, which I love about this, because you're going to bring some expertise to this podcast that maybe Nils and I don't have academically, but you have a Bachelor of Science from Liberty University, an MA from Southern Eastern Seminary, a PhD in Leadership from Southern Seminary, and you've also completed all the coursework for your doctor of education. On top of that, and I'll let you speak in a moment here, is you have served 20 years in various positions in local churches in the South, Midwest, in Chicago, Kansas, Omaha, Arkansas. You've been student pastor, college pastor, young adult, you've executive roles, so many things. And the way we know each other primarily is you volunteer at our Irvine South as the discipleship point person over all 201. So that's how we've interacted primarily. But man, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I know like probably people are like, okay, I think people are listening now. they're interested. So let's start this off. Number one, I got some questions because you're in academia, you're training church leaders, you've been in ministry, you know this, you've been in probably small, large churches. So how much should church leaders, pastors think about using technology in the ministry? And let's start there. How much should churches be thinking about technology? Because you've seen it both in seminary and you've been involved in it. How should we be thinking about technology?
Right. So life has become intricately interwoven with technology to the point that it's now ubiquitous and life is never going back the other direction. So it's here and it's here to stay. It's deeply embedded in our lives, and especially in the United States, but also really in the broader world, because the world is continuing to get on top of technology. And I believe that the digital divide that separates some of the world that doesn't have access will continue to get it, especially as companies like Google are flying drones over community populations just to provide them Wi-Fi. So the thing is, there's too much opportunity, there's too much money, there's too much everything for the world to get passed by. There's too much talent in those developing worlds. So those are, it's really important. And I train ministry students at both the seminary and the university level. And some of them are already pastors or on staff. And I think that the sad thing is I actually think that few of them have the handle on technology that we really wish. In fact, this is especially true for the fact that these are digital natives. Now, your audience knows the difference between digital natives and digital immigrants, but the basic version of it is that immigrants are people that grew into technology but didn't grow up with it. Natives are people that have already and always had it. The thing is that the church leaders I know use technology to a degree – to a greater or lesser degree, but most of them are not really curators of information, Jay, nor are they creators of information. Christians have an opportunity to be creators and curators. Curators are people that find the best information and share it. Creators, of course, create it themselves. What we have is a lot of media users, but we need more Christians on the forefront of leadership that actually provide a way to find their way through this murky forest of content that exists. And so I think that in the strategic front of truth, which is what we traffic in, though we are aware of the dangers, and there's like what I call technolatry, meaning the worship of technology, and then technophobia, the fear of technology, I think we need to really exploit technology for the kingdom of God. And as far as how that should be integrated into the things we do, I think that church-wise, you know, there's the church administration software, the financial management, room reservations, physical security, cybersecurity, outreach, evangelism, missions, discipleship, leadership development, accounting, finance, church communications. I mean, everything is tech. And then on the school side, I really think that schools have to really get over, Jay, their risk aversion and their fear about this. And they really need to go deep in this with a robust, comprehensive strategy that they implement. And I think that a lot of schools are on the ragged edge of survival, and they're really going to have to figure this out, and they've got to quit thinking of it as as sort of a necessary evil. They've got to leverage technology for the advancement of God's kingdom, and they've got to do it in curriculum and in other ways. And I could certainly speak to that, but I think a concern that I have is really that for us to be salt and light like we need to be, there have to be a lot better thinkers and a lot better thinking going on in this area. And so there's a lot I could say about it, but let me just throw it back to you to say that we have to be at the forefront of culture. We're close to seeding this area of influence to the world. And when that happens, I think we get marginalized and I think we lose big.
I love that. I love how that's said. And what I love about this, and I really feel like graduating from Biola from the Christian education program, what I loved about that program is it's so practical. Mm-hmm. It was very practical, there's some challenging things, but I feel like I don't feel like that focus in a lot of universities, at least the undergrad, doesn't get enough focus, because I felt like I got trained very like this is what it's going to look like to be part of a church,
right.
And that's what I love, that at least at Biola we were under the Bible department, but we were kind of our separate branch. And so I was curious, have you seen anything in the last eight years or so, are you guys talking more about this technology thing in classes? Are students bringing it up, asking?
Yeah. So interestingly, again, students, they're good with their WhatsApp app. They're good with Snapchat. A lot of them have never written a blog post. A lot of them have never done an audio recording or even a podcast. You know, you would just be really genuinely surprised at what isn't done. So I don't think of use as being really employing them for ministry. And so it's been an increasing concern. In fact, we just are going through our 10-year accreditation for our accrediting agencies, both regionally and theologically. Yeah. And one of the things that I've talked about is that we really have to integrate this, not just in terms of an elective in our courses, which we do sometimes. We really got to integrate this in terms of really making it a part of the core curriculum. And so I'm going to be suggesting that we make a course like this completely devoted to that. Students are sometimes asking for it, but a lot of students are just assume that we know what should be in the curriculum. And so, but what I'm doing is I've begun to integrate it into lots of my assignments. And so things from creating wikis to distribute information and knowledge and research, to creating audio podcasts, to creating video cast blogs, to creating blogs, to working on infographics, to creating basic websites. You know, a number of things like that are the kinds of things we have to begin to work with. And so I'm developing my students in that area. But the problem is, Jay, that we have lots of people that are in the theological training area or the theological education area, And seminaries basically have two sides, theological education and ministerial preparation.
Hmm.
So the thing is that most people are studying the Bible in a theological education side, and therefore a lot of students don't get enough on the ministerial training side. Hmm. As a result, there's a limited number of courses that they have to study in these areas. So if we don't make it required, I'm afraid that a lot of them will pass through and just not get really what they need. So it's an issue, and we do as good as lots, but the thing is we could do better, and lots of schools do much less. So it's a big issue, and it's going to become, I think that graduates that come out, Jay, are going to be in serious trouble in the future, and the ministries they lead mm-hmm. are not going to be ready for really the world that's already here, I might add. You know, it's already here. Yeah. But we've got to do that, and we've got to get ahead of the curve or at least stay with the curve. And institutions just haven't found a place in their theology consistently with how to handle and negotiate technology. Therefore, they are divorced from it to a greater or lesser degree.
Yeah, which I do feel, I think that's what one of the things I loved about at least my experience at Talbot was, you know, even how you guys were on the forefront of adapting, even integrating spiritual formation conversations into all the coursework. That was very evident. So you guys have been very much aware of that balance. And what I love about that, it's that idea of like, you know, leaders are learners, you know, the programs need to evolve. There's a consistency of truth is truth. But I think that's why I'm very excited. I was just thinking back, one of my first classes at Talbot, I had Professor Shin for hermeneutics. Mm-hmm. And there's a project that everybody has to do at the end of the class where you have to present a kind of an overview of the class content. And it's a great project, but I actually created a Blogspot blog and I recorded videos. And I asked him before, can I turn in a blog? And you know, like I kind of, and he was like, and Professor Shin's great. I love him. He was like, yeah, he was like, okay. But I actually just found the videos a while back ago. And I was like, man, it was on some, this is how quick stuff goes, is I had videos longer than 10 minutes, but at the time there was no place I could host videos at 10 minutes.
Right.
Because that was all capped. And so I had to find some offhand thing, but anyways, I'm excited to see how both Biola and the Talbot does that, because I do think you guys are very on the edge of that. And you guys are always having those conversations. Thinking about this, I was curious, I know you've seen this and you talked about this briefly, even how maybe you've done some of your assignments in your class and thinking, should churches be doing, let me say it this way. I struggle with this because there's still this sense that churches have this gathering power, like that all like the power of of your ministry is how many people can you get in a room at one time? And that's your community. But mm-hmm. there's also this pool that we can do more on-demand training online through things like YouTube and so forth. Should churches be doing more live training in person on site, or should churches be doing more on-demand online training? And what's the give and take on that?
Right. So there will always be a need for churches to have live training. I think there's a human dynamic there that's important. And if it's accessible and if you can do it, why not do it? But there's also lots of other factors that keep those kinds of events, a training and equipping, from being as successful as we would like. Therefore, they're not as attended as well. But they're important. They'll continue to be. I think that live or synchronous training has good future possibilities because it's already being used to a degree by churches that do simulcast or multicast and things like that. But the church overall has not caught up with that because they perceive it as being too technical or too hard to do, and so they don't do it. So I think that synchronous training or live training will have more opportunities in the future. I actually think that on-demand training has, in some ways, more possibilities because it's asynchronous, meaning we don't have to be there publicly, physically, I mean right now, and you don't have to watch right now, and so you can do it across time zones and everything. And it allows basically people to get the just-in-time training they need when they need it. Now, unless you have forum discussions where people can still interact, then you lose an important part because then it primarily becomes just a transfer of information. Mm-hmm. But if you add live forums or asynchronous forums to where people can at least engage, then you have the interaction going on. So that's the trade-off, I think. But it's being done to a degree. I think that part of the problem we have really is that churches do not truly understand and value the importance of training and equipping, and they don't invest in it as much as they should. And I think that's, by the way, why there's such a leadership crisis in churches today, because there's not enough of that going on. I think that as churches figure out the importance of training and equipping, especially for leveraging it in order to build the body so that it can be built both in depth and breadth, I think that they will realize that it's useful and cost effective, and it's something that has a financial model that is reasonable. So I think that the great thing about on-demand training, Jay, is that it's financially feasible because it can be used again and again and again. And especially if your subjects, your talent, uses non-trendy clothing, for example, and things like that, you can basically turn that over. You don't have the challenges of live production, which can be a little bit, you know, challenging to work with. You put it in the can. Then all you have to do is pay for simple content delivery networks to move that stuff across the wires, and people can get it whenever. So I think that what's interesting is entrepreneurial organizations that are Christian have really yet to figure out, I think, on the Christian side, how to do a lot of this. I mean, there is an organization or two that's doing some things. I've done some things with a couple of organizations or three that do this kind of thing. But I think overall, it's not been done at scale, and it's in some ways been prohibitive, in some ways not enough creative thinking. But to answer it shortly, yes, there's a need for online training. Yes, there's a need for live training. There's a need for live casts. But I think that I think we need all of them. But I think we shouldn't neglect the idea of putting training in the can that is meant to be, you know, a long-term and just-in-time kind of training for pieces like that. I think it's a really big issue.
Yeah, no, it's. I think it's funny how we've talked about this. Niels and I have talked about this, that we've done everything with church online. Obviously, there's so many conversations in this area that pop up. And just if somebody's new listening, you know, we want to get people online to offline by hosting groups in their home. So our strategy is start a conversation online, but as quickly as possible, getting them into a group in their home. Because we want them into something ultimately theologically sound where they can grow and be challenged. And for us, I've noticed a shift. We've gone from live to, we used to do rebroadcast, and now we do only live and on demand. Part of that is because we have a lot of small groups watching it, and a small group wants to watch it when they want to watch it. They don't want to force it. And so, but 70% of our weekly attendance is on demand. 30% is live. And I've just noticed that I'm like, you would think that the live is still like the number one thing, but it's like, well, the live is live, but it's like the live has a shelf life with time zones and all those things. And so I see that, like, you know, there's so many churches that I'm like, why aren't they thinking about it this way? Or, and the same thing could be said about, you know, there's things that I do that I'm like, why am I thinking about that way? But I was curious about that. So thanks for that insight. With this, I want to continue on this. We have a couple more minutes here. You know, there's been a lot of obviously trends over the last couple of years, with online universities and seminaries and programs. Obviously there's a lot of tension there. Mm-hmm. And I'm very grateful, because I think a lot of church online and people in my position, or directors, people doing this kind of stuff, we benefit from a lot of the research that has been done about the effectiveness of those programs. It's probably the biggest data pool right now currently to see how effective some of these things are. How do you see seminaries, training for church leaders looking different over the next 10 years? Do you think seminary might look different in 10 years? Like, what are some thoughts there?
Yeah, really, it's education is in a time of really paradigmatic change. I mean, all the rules are changing. There's massive disruption going on, and it's actually, for the most part, for the good. I think that the relevance and practicality of seminary training or ministerial training will be largely dependent probably on how institutions view themselves and how ministers view institutions. That is to say that if schools and Christian leaders view seminary, and this is really crucial, if we view seminaries as primarily places where knowledge is given, then seminary will become increasingly impractical and irrelevant as digital theological resources are made available. So if theological education is nothing but information acquisition, and information transfer, then it will become rare to get people to go to campus for that because they can get it together. I mean, get it elsewhere. And the only thing keeping that in business, now this is crucial, the only thing at that point that would keep seminaries in business would be the experience of getting together with people in a learning environment in person, and then the necessity of an accredited degree that allows them that type of current training, and the financial ability of people to pay for that. The problem is that the ability and willingness to pay for that would shrink over time, because if you can figure out assessment and accreditation and credentialing apart from a classroom experience, then that goes away. And I think that you have a handful of great seminaries. You know, mine might be one of those that would survive, but most of them would go by the wayside. Now, that would then lead to basically a downward spiral and a perpetual doom loop for essentially all theological education. However, schools and individuals who instead think of learning as transformational and not merely as intellectual, meaning they think of learning biblically, meaning that they say, okay, learning is not just information for the mind, but it's transformation for the heart, and it's transformation for lifestyle. And if we begin to think of these as delivering, as seminaries of delivering transformative learning experiences where minds are informed and hearts are shaped and lives are changed, then if we can deliver that as opposed to just mere information, then those seminaries that are forming souls and developing leaders and cultivating spiritual giants in that way, I think there's a place for that. And I think that those will then, along with credentialing, I think that those will stick around. And so I think that, you know, that whatever the government considers a legitimate degree, will really affect what happens, because the question is really, are you learning just because you sat 48 hours in a seat somewhere, or is your life changed because of something else? So I think the thing is that there's a place for traditional, and I think it will be increasingly augmented with online. And I think some of the best models are non-residency, where you have people living where they want, coming in for short bursts to study together, and then doing a lot in modified delivery systems like online and so on and so forth, or completely online works too. I'm also a believer in traditional classical education in the you know, on campus, but I'm just saying that it's going to be increasingly challenging. And honestly, especially with scholarship the way it is, Jay, I mean, you know, we no longer want to just sit with the 32nd best or 50th best theology professor. We want to sit with the celebu prof. We want to be with the best. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing really that keeps us from getting the best of the best piped in through those kinds of resources, but we just have to negotiate that. So I think the main answer in brief then is this, and this is a sort of a clarion call really to even people like me, is that we have to think of learning as transformational. And because if all that seminaries and educators do is dump information in the minds of people, they can get that a lot of other places, a lot more conveniently, a lot cheaper than they can. And as soon as credentialing changes, they leave us high and dry. But instead, if we say, we're going to do life on life, transformational discipleship with you, equipping with you, training with you, pouring in our lives, until Christ is formed in you, that we literally impart our very lives, like Thessalonians say, then I think we have something. Without that, we've got information transfer, and that's a short trip down the railway. You know, it's not going to end up well.
Wow, that's great. That's what I struggle with, because you see so many things with, you know, obviously iTunes University, you can take different things on podcasts. You can listen to, like you were saying, you can listen to the best of whatever area, you know, like I never took a class at Talbot with William Lane Craig, but I've listened to tons of his stuff, or JP Moore, whoever it is. I saw Lifeway was doing a partnership. I think it's New Churches. They're doing some online courses to planting stuff. There's all this stuff. But I find what I really benefited the most from going, and I remember I asked a friend right before I started my MA at Talbot, because I asked him, should I do this? Is this worth it? And I wanted to do it, but I was more, I'm a big believer in asking for, what do people think? And you know, he said, you know, I think you will benefit greatly from it. And I think because of how you're set up, you will enjoy it, but I think it will change. And I remember what I love mostly about my experience was I felt like at least Biola Talbot, they were such a good way of systematically framing everything up. And it's kind of like how you file it in your head. And I think a lot of people, like, they're learning things and it's when it's a la carte, you don't know how to place it. And it's not developing a worldview robustly. And especially when you're listening from different universities, you might go to this university and they believe this on this, you're going to hear that. But I feel like going through a program where I know people are reviewing and even, you know, the accreditation make you do that stuff. And so I still see that missing. I don't see that robust thing online. You know, for me now, I can go listen to stuff, but I have ways to file it. And so, you know, I benefited from that. So I'm so curious to watch how you guys go through that.
Right. Well, I think what you're really saying, though, is it's interesting because what you're saying is that, you know, like the Apostle Paul said that we have to teach the whole counsel of God. And when you do a course here or there, you sort of get piecemeal information. But what you're describing is really classification and curation again, mm-hmm. you know, because what you're saying is, okay, I need a system of thought. I need a worldview. I need a comprehensive perspective, a meta narrative. Mm-hmm. And to get that, I need to not have it piecemeal, but I need to really put it together. And I think that that is something that a curriculum is a course of study. And I think that's what a good curriculum does. And so you've definitely uncovered the most important part of a course, which is the curriculum itself and the fact that it's balanced in theology and other core curriculum areas and ministry and et cetera. But, and from especially from a certain theological perspective, because then you get a true worldview. But so I think that, but really what that is that's professors that are experts in their area creating a new delivery of insights and perspectives and curating great information that then is narrowed down into a course on one area. So that's great stuff. And that's really the great benefit of a good education and a degree program. It's just that more and more pragmatism in people is causing them to say, hey, what do I need for right now? And so they sort of get just the facts approach. And the problem is they really have a lot of holes in their overall knowledge. And lots of churches are, you know, hiring people without education they need. And it can be pragmatically useful, but in the long run, it can also have major problems because they have a lack of theological sophistication. And really, you need that depth sometimes in ministers that really know what's going on and stuff. But lots of churches don't understand that yet, and we've got to do a better job as seminaries to communicate what we're offering.
My last question here is, what are some trends that you're seeing in the last couple of years or even now that you're kind of going, churches need to pay attention? Is there anything that you would highlight for a church leader?
Well, you mean in terms of education or in terms of media in general? Or
I think technology in general, you know, certain things. I don't know if you get excited. You know, if you go to your website right now, you see, you know, you still got, you know, the Google, you know, Glass up. I don't know if it's virtual reality. I don't know if it's just on-demand training in general. What are some things that you're seeing that, hey, pay attention, this is going to be important?
Right. So, yeah, I'll give some brief ones. I'll tell you one that's not sexy, but I think is one of the most important things that we've not figured out yet, and that's the use of big data for ministry. The information age led to an exponential increase in human knowledge, and that included the volume of knowledge, the velocity of knowledge, the variety of knowledge. And with it, technology has enabled society, the world, to build and collect and preserve and now harness enormous sets of data, information. And these are now done in novel ways that can help us solve global problems and even personal problems to help make human life better. And that's what God has given us. The thing is that Christians are behind the eight ball on that. And I think that what needs to happen is Christians need to get their minds around this and gather together committed believers that are good thinkers with the knowledge and the time and the skills to devote to these areas. And think about Christian groups, Christian organizations, churches, mission agencies, college, Christian universities, seminaries, nonprofits, et cetera, hospitals, Christian hospitals and businesses. Imagine if they were to understand how to leverage and crunch data in ways that take massive data sets that give us insights into human behavior, human decision-making, human priorities, and how can Christian organizations use those strategically in information and in terms of things like mission strategies, church planning concepts, Bible interpretation, Bible translation, organizational financial planning, curriculum design, educational models. I mean, if you can imagine that, those are massive ways that we have to get ahead of knowledge so we can leverage the knowledge that's there for Christians. I think another trend is the trend toward rich media. Now, there's some downsides to it because of some obvious things, but the world went from a audio or a oral tradition to a written tradition in the 1500s, 16th century with the printing press. And then, of course, it went to broadcast in terms of radio and TV in the, let's say, the 1910s, 20s, and 50s. But what we have now is through digital, we have an enormous ability to move data and information. And I think that as bandwidth happens, you know, you're talking Cat 6 and WiMAX, Wi-Fi, and LTE, you know, that goes up to different levels. I think when that happens, and once we get bandwidth taken care of, I think there's going to be a massive move toward audio and podcasts that we have not yet seen in downloadable audio files. The great thing about audio is you don't have to see it. You don't have to distract yourself by watching a screen. That's why audiences are so loyal to their podcasts, because they tend to spend more time with podcasts than they do with video. So I think that podcasts are enormous. I think they're going to be a great delivery system. I think that we'll even see a day when audio only may even end up being formal education in some ways. So I think that's big. So audio, with all the various applications that I won't get into, is going to be huge. Another rich media opportunity, I think, is the nature of image. Images have now overtaken text in lots of ways. And I think with Instagram and Pinterest and many other image-based applications and social media, I think that images, you know, pictures say 1,000 words. And I think what we're going to see is a fusion of the written word. I think we, a lot of times as Christians, we think propositionally. So we think of truth going forth in text and language and logos. But I think also we got to remember, not only did God give us the word, but he also gave us the image of Christ, like Colossians 1 says. He gave us the image of himself in this person, this three-dimensional person of Christ, the picture of Jesus. So I think that image and text together, and I think that the web and digital allows us to basically put together images for ministry-based things. I'm talking about flat images, two-dimensional, for ministry, when we put that with words. So I think that there's lots of opportunity for that kind of thing, and obviously rich media video. YouTube, as you know, is the second most search engine on the world. It's where people get their information. It's where we teach ourselves how to do things, you know, change a toilet or to fix your car. I mean, and so I think that video is going to continue to be big. I think the main issue is that we have to get over the issue with regard to bandwidth, but churches are going to continue to use it more and more. And that plus telecommunications in general, just that I think that, for example, things as creative as churches hiring the time of church counselors and things like that to literally give online video conference, like interaction and counseling. I think we're going to see all those kinds of things. We just have around it. So I think that the kingdom of God is going to be greatly advantaged by technology. It doesn't mean that I am overly optimistic. We still have the human condition. We still have fallenness. We still have massive problems with our souls. But the thing is that these opportunities are things that God has given. And I think that a lot of smart Christians are going to get together, collaborate, figure these things out. And I believe there's going to be a lot of Christian businessmen and others that would like to support those things. So I'm optimistic overall that God is going to leverage this for the advancement of God's kingdom and his glory.
Wow. Hey, thank you, Freddie, so much for taking time. I know those listening, I mean, you took our podcast to a next level here, just hearing all the background. And so thank you so much for taking time. If you were interested at all to learn more about Freddie, go to freddiecadorza.com. I'm going to put links in our podcast and on the website and everything, so explore that. There's tons of great resources. And if you're listening, if you're interested, to go next level in some training, we have socialmediachurch.university. Check that out. Links in the as well. But thank you, Freddie, so much for taking it. I know we took some extra time here, so but it's such great stuff. So I want to thank you again. And if you're listening, go to his website, check out our show notes. So if to learn more about the show, go to socialmediachurch.church and engage with the hashtag SMC podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Social Media Church podcast. To learn more about the hosts, the show, or suggest a future topic, check out socialmedia.church. If you liked what you heard, then take a couple minutes to leave a review on iTunes. Every review helps. Lastly, share the podcast with a friend and use the hashtag SMC Podcast to engage with the hosts. Thanks again for listening.